Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and welcome to Get the Table, another wrestling roundtable discussion podcast with myself, Adam Wilborn, and one of the Dadley Boys, Michael Hamflett from What Called You, here to discuss another burning wrestling issue. But before we get into it, if you're a fan of this sort of thing, make sure you subscribe to What Called Wrestling on either iTunes, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts from, for daily wrestling podcasts where we review Raw, SmackDown, the Wednesday Night War between AEW and NXT, pay-per-views, we have interviews, roundtable discussions, and a roundup of the week. Complete with a bloody good quiz, of course, on wrestle culture. But as I said, joined by Michael Hamflett and Sir, we are gathered here today to talk about the Wednesday Night War and why it is far from over. Earlier on this week, NXT defeating AEW in the ratings war. We're not going into the whole demographics thing just yet anyway. NXT, 876,000 plays. AEW's 781,000. Granted, this was as a result of NXT putting on a sort of pay-per-view quality TV show with Halloween Havoc. It's after Halloween, so I've got rid of the noise effect now. You'll be pleased. But yeah, a great achievement by NXT, and they're still in this war.
Yeah. Are they still in this war, or was it just a really good night? I don't know yet. I don't want us to be that podcast that comes out just days after the first win in ages and be like, the war's back on! And then the ratings go back to the same pattern that we've seen for most of 2020. But I will say, in the immediate aftermath of the ratings, the viewership win, God damn it, if you don't mention it's just viewership, the viewership win for NXT, there was a lot of it, like immediate response along the lines of, well, they've just put on a pay-per-view, they've themed it out the arse. And, you know, all of that is true, I guess, technically. Like, Halloween Havoc was the show heavily leaned on the Halloween theme and wrapped a card around it that sort of gave you two reasons to watch. A great card plus what's this going to look like, how is it going to play out, etc., etc., etc. But, and this came up in the reviews of the one that we did of TakeOver, and indeed the Wednesday Night War reviews and the build-up to Halloween Havoc, this was booked a month out. This featured payoffs to programs that have started a month to 6 weeks earlier. So while, yes, the set dressing was fantastic, the promotion and the theme and the commitment to the bit was really outstanding. And certainly it captured more eyes than I thought it would. I didn't sense that there was going to be any different to that overall viewership. So I was really surprised at not just the jump, but in the manner in which it defeated AEW as well. However, I think therefore there was a bit of a missed praise being given for some of the storylines and some of the matches and some of the angles. There are gradually, and I mean really gradually, so gradually that if you're not watching regularly, you wouldn't even notice, giant leaps being made for certain characters. There is a move back to what made NXT functional, if not always fun, in the past. There has been a bit less panic, a bit less flapping. And it just feels like that won't get mentioned for another several weeks because it's likely that AEW will go back to winning the viewership in short order. It doesn't feel like this is going to be the start of like a momentous run for NXT. And yet, I sense that from a booking point of view and strictly from a fan point of view, it might be. It might be something we can enjoy again because 2020 has been a hard shift.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, you know, people look at the ratings. I've always forget how to describe it. The fact that NXT drew more viewers overall than AEW and say, like you say, this is a win for them, the Wednesday Night War, etc., etc. But I feel like that figure is more sort of emblematic of a shift in NXT's decision-making, as you kind of alluded to there. And the best way I can put it, and I think Sidge put it best, in our little group chat, was, has NXT unjumped the shark?
Well, it's been a hell of a, like, you know, like the triple jump, Jonathan Edwards won gold medals, and you have to do one of them backwards just to get back over the shark they jumped when they did Ciampa versus Gargano back in April. Sorry, Will Bond, I know you loved it, but that was a decided turning point for this brand. Maybe, you know. I did a piece about 6 weeks ago for whatculture.com/WWE, right around the build when they just announced it was going to be Finn Balor versus Kyle O'Reilly at TakeOver 31. And in that, I posited that maybe this was a new era for NXT. It wasn't one that had an exciting title. It wasn't one that they were going to do network specials on for years to come. But it was almost in how bland and assured it was that it felt like things were changing for the good. That main event, the branding of TakeOver 31 is nothing other than this is the 31st TakeOver, and here's a match between a champion that you trust and a contender you can't wait to see get a shot. It was a long, long, long way away from some of the panic booking they've done in 2020. The obvious example. And like, it won a rating with an amazing main event that we'll probably talk to later on. But like, we have to look at the Great American Bash as an example of what NXT like became at the height of this stressed need to just try and win a week every now and then. And again, you have to qualify win, because like, AEW fans get really pissed off about it when you don't. But like, to qualify a win is to say that like the viewership was won for one night. Or was it two? I think it won both weeks, didn't it, the Great American Bash. But ultimately the gains were short term. Keith Lee won both NXT championships and looked worse for it. The belts were in a worse situation as a result of all that went down. All of that sort of stuff was a massive, massive sugar rush for a fortnight, but like smacked of the desperation that it was. And I just felt like that just before TakeOver 31, you were seeing that desperation dissolve again. Ironically enough, it was off the back of the Adam Cole Finn Balor match, which itself was as a result of a four-way Iron Man match having a screwy finish to draw another rating. So it was almost like from the embers of this ugly period for NXT, they were trying to grow something new.
Yeah, it felt like for the first year of AEW, NXT had tried absolutely everything. You look at the first night of AEW, for example, when they went like limited commercials and title matches and what have you on the show. All the way through to, like you say, just hot shot booking. Oh, we're going to have another title match. Oh, we're going to announce matches 10 minutes before the show to try and desperately claw that audience back. And the only time they really won the Wednesday Night War was when AEW wasn't on Wednesday nights, if we're perfectly honest, towards the end. So, yeah, do you think there was just this, you know, aside from obviously this week where they put on a pay-per-view quality show on a weekly TV show instead, this acceptance amongst NXT of, let's go back to our roots in terms of what made people really enjoy NXT years ago.
Yes, I think that's the case. And yes, I hope so as a fan of the brand, not because I particularly want NXT or for that matter, any WWE produced show to ground AEW into the dirt. I don't think anybody wants that. But as a fan of NXT and as somebody that likes to like as much wrestling as I possibly can, I would rather that be the case. If you look at, you know, we've said it a couple of times now about how to win ratings war. I think the only time NXT also won the demographics along with the viewership was the December 18th, 2019 show headlined by Rhea Ripley and Shayna Baszler. Now, there's two things happening there. Number one, you are paying off a fabulous long-term storyline where, well, two really. One, the seemingly unending streak of dominance by Shayna Baszler, and the about 4 or 5 month build of Rhea Ripley from the day she showed up in Full Sail through Survivor Series weekend, where she was dominant through all the other hurdles she'd managed to jump to get to Shayna Baszler. That was a main event in its own right on any show. It could have been on an NXT takeover. It could have been on a WWE pay-per-view, and I think it would have done well. And in this case, it did well through our television rating. But also what it did was lean on the strength of the women's division. Not for the first time, NXT main evented with a women's title match and didn't do it in that kind of showy way where it was trying to announce itself in that kind of way that, like, even to a point WWE did a lot with Evolution. It was like, can you believe we're doing this just for the women? That's never been the case in NXT because it doesn't need to be. Those days were back in 2014, the last time that NXT was needing to pat itself on the back for its women's division. It's something that showed long-term promise and like perseverance, and they've just stuck with it to the point where now it's fairly established as the best in the game. I can't pretend to watch as much Stardom as I would ever like outside of some brilliant Twitter recommendations. But certainly in North America, it's probably the best women's division ever. And that's something they can sell earnestly. That's something they rarely betray with the booking. And that kind of, to tie December 18th's win to Halloween Havoc's win, I just feel like the similar things there, the similar things happening, the loyalty to the women's division from the audience that has never given up on it, plus the manner of storytelling they've done with these characters to get to this point, tells me that NXT still can. It just needs to make sure that it continues to do so. It was interesting. There was a report that went out, and you know, typically you have to take these, you know, with a certain pinch of salt, because you never know whose agenda it is trying to get this kind of leaked news out there. But apparently Vince McMahon has like really lost his patience with NXT, and not just in that way where he's going to turn up and bulldoze the Capital Wrestling Center and put his stamp on it, more in a way that he's just pissed off and he doesn't want to look at it. It's like somebody bringing him a steak wrap without any ketchup. He just can't believe that somebody would even do that. He's furious that a product of his is currently seen as a loser, seen as a loser brand. So he just wants nothing to do with it. That might be for the best. If Vince McMahon is taking himself out of the fight, and in that sort of stern dad way, giving Triple H a bollocking for it, that might be for the best. Him being nowhere near it, and yet Triple H having that motivation to have to reclaim some of the respect he might have lost from dead, might sort of like generate that back to basics philosophy, which can only be for the best. If they stop trying to win viewerships and trying to win demos, they might win some viewerships and demos.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why United Healthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I think Michael Sidgwick's perception of NXT tells you all you really need to know about the last few weeks. I mean, people say, oh, you know, he's a paid AEW shill, and whatever AEW does, he praises, and whatever NXT does, he sort of poo-poos. But no, he just likes good wrestling, and he's also someone who was in love with NXT back in the day. He wrote a bloody book about it, as I've mentioned on numerous occasions. And the thing is he has turned around on not just Johnny Gargano, but on NXT and started appreciating it, probably because of those reasons. Because it was so obvious when they just suddenly say, oh, and this is going to happen this week, just coincidentally whilst AEW are trying to do something. And now, you know, we're here to talk about why the Wednesday Night War is far from over. I still think regularly, week in, week out, and probably maybe even for the rest of the year, AEW are going to win the ratings battle. But I think NXT, now that the Eye of Sauron isn't so focused on it, has accepted its position as not trying to, you know, outdraw AEW like it's the Monday Night Wars all over again, but instead just trying to siphon off viewers and still produce a really good wrestling show. And like I said earlier, just remind everyone why NXT was so beloved a few years back.
Yeah, it's interesting, right, this, because obviously, and ultimately, NXT drove all of these comparisons. They didn't need to switch it from 1 hour on the network to, like, trying to negotiate 2 hours on USA. This remains on WWE and on NXT, why the comparisons continue to get made. But AEW have worked really, really hard at trying to, not necessarily re-educate wrestling fans, but remind wrestling fans of another way that things can be done, whether that be in the form of finish policy, which they've really, really stuck to over the last 12 months, whether that be, I would say, about an 80% use of the rankings, which is a good return for a year, although they do deserve scrutiny when they don't. I think that's reasonable because of the various the huge promises they made in their kind of their mission statement when they launched. But ultimately, one of the biggest things is promos, and in how people talk and in how people set up matches and the way that these matches are crafted. NXT will never not be a subsidiary of WWE. So there'll be things on NXT that if you are just completely sick of how WWE does things, you will never truly love about NXT. The best trick NXT played in around 2014 through to around 2017 was fooling people that it wasn't WWE. Like, as many people invested just because they felt like they were sticking it to the McMahon by watching his Network B show instead of watching Raw and SmackDown. As wild as that sounds, that was genuinely kind of a moment that they captured. AEW's very existence has robbed them of that moment because there is a literal non-WWE product on another channel. So you are almost, what it does is almost shines a light when Keith Lee cuts a promo, and I'm talking about before he got to Raw, that sounds decidedly main roster, or a match is set up by William Regal that just makes no, like, what general manager would think, you know what we need is we need six triple threats. Like, these things are just, I mean, and I say this, and then Dynamite, like, did a raffle. So every wrestling company is guilty of this sort of thing, but NXT is likely to do it far more than AEW. So there will be things on a two-hour edition of NXT that will ultimately still turn people off and will still alienate people. However, what NXT needs to worry about, it's taking care of the audience that doesn't mind a bit of WWE sprinkled in with credible wrestling. I consider myself part of the audience. I don't want to speak for you, but I dare say you're the same.
Yeah.
There's a certain, I imagine, quite a large section of fans that are going to be relatively content with all the ugliness of sports entertainment, so long as it's wrapped in a product that is broadly logical and, like, doesn't patronize and doesn't condescend and doesn't make you feel stupid for investing. And I just think that's certainly the last month, I would say TakeOver, I didn't really enjoy TakeOver 31, but I certainly think it held true to that. But certainly for the last month of television booking, there haven't been too many character decisions and character choices that we've been critical of. We might not like Dexter Lumis, and we might not want to see the Velveteen Dream get booked, and we might roll our eyes when Tommaso Ciampa's such a miserable bastard. But none of it isn't, like, logical. You know, none of it is sort of, none of it's completely off the wall stupid. It just might not be your cup of tea. And I think that's an important difference between the people that were, as you say about Sidgwick, like, earnestly critical of NXT versus the people that just cannot bear the sight of it because it is still a Vince McMahon production.
I think for the first time in a long time, I'm actually optimistic about NXT's future, and I'm excitedly fantasy booking stuff in my head that I can know that they won't just attempt to try and pull off in 2 weeks or whatever, that we can look ahead now to, for example, the Pat McAfee Undisputed Era feud and go, well, that's something for December's TakeOver. That could potentially be War Games or, you know, a match of that type, rather than next week, Pat McAfee and his goons versus, you know, Adam Cole and his boys. It's going to be held up on. It's going to be built to. And we've already seen, like you say, the breadcrumbs for that being laid out from TakeOver. We've talked about things from an NXT perspective. On the AEW side of things, should they be worried by this loss this week, considering they're so close to full gear? Or is it just, as AEW fans have kind of been explaining away on Twitter since Alvarez tweeted the ratings, it wasn't a great AEW. Well, it was a good AEW show. It wasn't the best, but it's also going up against effectively a WWE pay-per-view. And next week's the go-home for full gear. The week after that's the fallout from full gear. It's a marathon, not a sprint, to use WWE's own terminology.
I don't know. I don't want to speak for those AEW diehards that reply to Alvarez's tweet, because I'm not sure about the sanity of most people that reply to Alvarez's tweet, outside of a Petey McPickle gif, which I always look forward to. By the way, where was the gif this week, Petey? I think that a lot of those worries are going to be just external worries outside of AEW, not within AEW. Nothing from a year plus of largely pretty great pro wrestling has made me, or really should anybody else, feel concerned that AEW are thinking too much about what other people are doing. The best wrestling shows on the best runs in the best booking periods of each show's, like, lifespans have always been focused more on what they've been doing rather than what the opposition's been up to. That's always been the case. I'm not saying that every now and then you can't count a program successfully. There is, of course, those stories of Eric Bischoff with two monitors under his commentary table. And I think, like, every now and then, if you have the opportunity to do something live, like, why not? Why not use your power? If you have, I go back to the Great American Bash. They dropped in, I think, like 2 or 3 weeks of Sasha and Bayley interacting with NXT to the point where Sasha Banks versus Io Shirai just had enough storyline thread on it to justify its existence. And we got an absolute banger match out of it. You know, like, I love the match. It won a rating that week because people were very, very keen to see what was effectively a dream match given away on television. So as a fan, you can enjoy like counterbooking in small doses, but it's when it becomes the norm that it's a problem. AEW never, I don't even think even once shown me or given me any indication. Actually, no, literally once. I think AEW tried to counterbook once. And I said this 3 weeks ago. So this is not some sort of like ratings post script that I'm trying to claim a victory lap for. I genuinely believe they ran Cody Rhodes and Orange Cassidy back as quickly as they did to try and just siphon a few viewers away from Halloween Havoc, because Halloween Havoc had been announced a month in advance. And when you let your opposition know that you're doing something pretty big, it actually clues the opposition in to try and do something to work against that. In hindsight, was it really worth doing Cody and Orange Cassidy again? I would argue not. I don't think the match like did too much for people. We're still getting Cody versus Darby Allin, which is kind of what we were getting anyway off the back of the draw. So that would be the one time, and even then, that's just purely my speculation. That could have always been in the offing that they were going to do a lumberjack match to set up other things. But yeah, I wouldn't worry if you're an AEW fan and you don't want to see them affected by this, because it hasn't yet looked so far like they're remotely affected by the fact that there's opposition. I'm sure they want to win, but I'm sure they want to win doing what they plan to do all along, rather than feeling like they have to make changes to compete.
We've talked about how NXT needs to and has kind of stopped counter-programming so much against AEW, and like you say, just concentrate on what you're doing. In terms of AEW, what do they need to do differently, alongside, of course, fixing whatever on earth is going on with that women's division?
Well, I mean, that's probably the best starting point. Our very own Andy Murray condensed some stuff from Dave Meltzer this morning very nicely on Twitter about the quarter hour that was lost heavily in the Serena Deeb NWA title defense, which was a great match. We are gifted the privilege to review these shows for a living, so we watched them all. And it was just a tremendous, worthy women's match, not in that traditional penultimate last quarter hour segment that AEW has slotted these meaningless women's matches into in the past. It was everything that you want to see from a potential women's division. You can't call it a division yet, but it's everything you want to see from one, should it, like, you know, primarily exist. And yet it lost numbers. And that's, to Murray's point, what he made in the tweet, and it's kind of what we referred to here. That's not on Serena Deeb. It's not on Layla Hirsch. It's not even on the NWA title that we're fighting for. It's on about a year of what appears to be minimal investment. Fans will pick up on that. Fans will think, they don't care, so I don't need to care. I wonder what's happening over in the bizarre neon graveyard on the other side at the moment. They're not going to do that every week, and that's why Halloween Havoc was successful. There's probably plenty of weeks where people don't feel the need to channel hop or go and skip over and see what's happening for 15 minute segments, as they were this week, and that'll have definitely helped Halloween Havoc. But yeah, it's we're at the point now, and you know, I was banging this drum a long time ago, and I'm understanding now, as I was then, of the problems AEW face in terms of the talent pool and the global bastard and blah, 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 blah. But they are reaping what they've sown when it comes to this women's division. There were systemic issues when there were still crowds and before there was a global bastard, or at least before there was one that was reaching all of us. And since then, they've brought talent in. They've pushed the odd one or two. They've run a tag tournament, which, you know, was of fair to middling quality. Very little of it, as have we been told, has mattered after the fact. You know, if they had all the ducks in a row, there would be more talent emerging from that tag division, even if some of it wasn't quote-unquote ready. It would be in the way that those women were presented, and it would be, as is often the case of wrestling, perception would become reality. Nyla Rose, the number one contender for the title, has got Vicky Guerrero as her manager, and has that ever really helped her? You know, she got a title shot by threatening to not work for the company. It wasn't even a logical reason why she got this rematch against Hikaru Shida. There's loads of little things you can pick out, and we've done that on other podcasts, so I'm not going to do that here. But it all leads to things like a massive audience drop-off for a big, significant match that would have been a great advert for the AEW Women's Division. And then conversely, what you have is NXT. The one thing that they've done right, even when they were doing everything else wrong, was the Women's Division. And they get numbers against a Kenny Omega Penta match. Now, taste is taste. I personally think I preferred Candice LeRae and Io Shirai to Kenny and Penta. But it's a toss-up. They were both awesome main events. Both shows were leading from the front. And this time around, NXT won. It's not the first time that the women's division has beaten a Kenny Omega main event. And this isn't to like beat up Kenny Omega as well. He's amazing. He probably is the best wrestler in the world. But again, it just shows investment in the women's division, shows investment in Io Shirai as women's champion. NXT hasn't done an amazing job of booking Io Shirai as its champion. They tend to book the challengers rather than the champion, but it shows what investment is inbuilt, that people turn out and turn up when she's putting the title on the line, because maybe it doesn't matter what storylines she's invested in. Maybe this division matters, and maybe the prestige of that belt matters. And that's the job that AEW really need to make, as much as the Kenny Omega singles push, need to make like a priority one for year two.
Mm. Yeah, one of the other things I would suggest that they maybe need to slightly do differently is stop concentrating on the like shiny new thing and then forgetting about their previous acquisitions, for example. Like, you know, you look, I mean, Shawn Spears is making a brilliant recovery, but he was cast off. Miro, Brody Lee, you know, they've had their moments, but it feels like there's no long-term plan there just yet, which sort of leads me into my final question. We've seen, as I alluded to there, AEW picking up not just WWE's cast-offs. This isn't TNA back in the day. This is them, you know, openly courting and getting some of WWE's top talents and just using them better. We've seen a sort of, we're into past a year now of AEW, and we've seen a backlash to that now in terms of, and you know, at time of recording, we still don't really know the exact ins and outs of this, but you look at the people like Ben Carter and Thunder Rosa, names who are being associated with WWE, having appeared on AEW television. And myself and Sidri yesterday did a podcast all about the brilliant Wardlow and what potential he's got in AEW. And as a result of that, how much WWE, I mean, look at him. He's a Vince McMahon specimen, 100%. Do AEW have to be concerned about things swinging the other way and WWE stealing their talent, perhaps?
I think the longer it was going to exist, that was always going to be a concern, especially if it was a good show. It was never really, as a TNA fan at the time, it was always the dream of so many of those wrestlers to make it to WWE, because that always felt like the tier. It was like, oh, they're great in TNA, but like, could you ever imagine seeing them in WWE? And there was oftentimes when I liked TNA more than WWE, but I still thought, there's only so much AJ Styles can do here, there's only so much Samoa Joe can do here, and so on and so on and so on. The names, you know, list as long as your arm. In AEW, that narrative is slightly different, because really, knowing what we know even about NXT call-ups, let alone generic WWE signees, you kind of don't want to go and see people go and then get failed by that system. Look at the discourse when WWE signed Ben Carter. Like, the kid was thrilled. There was an old video emerged that like said it was his dream to get signed there. Obviously, AEW, for whatever reasons, couldn't get the ducks in a row financially to sort of work permit. Whatever the circumstances were, he was obviously thrilled to get that. And yet people, with good reason, were really disappointed because they love him. And it was like, oh, well, if he goes on NXT UK, I'll probably never see him. And if he goes on WWE, have a look at Ricochet, you know? Have a look at what they did with Neville. And so, you know, examples myriad. What might occur with AEW, and this might not be the worst thing in the world. I'm all for wrestlers having secure financial sort of like, well, security, yeah, by pro wrestling in this era. We might see a return to something that resembles the territorial era. So as Vince McMahon was trying desperately to take over the American wrestling landscape in the 1980s, how the territories worked before then was that guys would sort of jump from one to another. You would turn up in that town and you would be the hottest thing going in that town. And because there wasn't national cable, if you're a, I don't know, Hacksaw Jim Duggan, right? And nobody's seen your act before, and like they're just wowed by it. And you turn up in Mid-South, which is where it was a huge star, right? They're just like, oh my God, he's amazing. The people in that territory, in that state, have no idea that Hacksaw Jim Duggan cut his teeth 100 miles away in another town, or won the title in another town, or so on and so on and so on. And you would sort of exploit a character, you would make as much money as you possibly could for both promoter and wrestler, and then you would move on. And then the cycle would sort of continue like that. And so Vince McMahon took a look at all of them and said, well, I'll take that top star and that top star and that top star and that top star. Territories had no top stars to share and rotate, and the whole thing burned as Vince McMahon made millions. AEW might bring that back. I was thinking about Lance Archer. I don't agree at all with the lazy, reductive takes that he was buried by the big losses he's taken against both Cody and John Moxley. But I do wonder if he signed, speculatively, a 1 to 2 year contract, where he might be in 1 to 2 years off the back of those losses. His value won't have gone down because there have been points where he's looked amazing. But I think, as I mentioned at the time, you can't be Lance Archer and have your catchphrase be, most people die. There is a shelf life for that character, and it's looking at the moment like two defeats in high profile matches might be that shelf life. So if you're Lance Archer and you have this amazing, fabulous run and you've got gas in the tank for a WWE stint, it might be that at the end of those 2 years, you take a look around and AEW say, well, why don't you see what you can get? And WWE say, well, actually, you've become a television star. So we'll have you right now, thanks very much. And you can come and make a huge splash on NXT or on Raw or on SmackDown. And I just wonder if we'll get a little bit more of that again. Once people are phased down in AEW and phased out, it might sound cruel, but it keeps the pool in AEW fiercely competitive because the wrestlers know I kind of need to always be a big deal around here. Otherwise, they might just not give me a contract renewal in a year, 2 years' time. In the meantime, WWE can be watching and thinking, hang on, like a million people have seen them in a week. They're a worthwhile pickup. It might be good for the marketplace of pro wrestling, if not as secure as it should be, considering that you've got two billionaire-backed companies. there are pros and cons. There always are. It's capitalism. It's gross. But yeah, if you look at the AEW roster now, it's hard to imagine that all of them will be there in spots that you are satisfied with in another year's time. The process is strong, but it's also very fluid.
So in summary, the Wednesday Night War is far from over. It's nice, you know, talking through these things. I'm back to being as excited as I was about a year ago, if I'm honest, because now NXT has seemingly found its groove, has got its groove back, and is no longer a sort of also-ran that occasionally puts on numbers grabbing shows. I realize I'm saying that off the back of Halloween Havoc, but like you say, the general consensus around it is far different. And what a few weeks we've got to come. We've got obviously the build to take over as we head towards December. You've got the fallout from Halloween Havoc next week alongside the build to Full Gear and then the fallout from Full Gear. It's a great time to be a fan of one or both of these shows.
I think so. I think we all enjoy the war for what it is, and we're able to do it without anybody getting hurt or made sad for liking the show they like. But I would just say as well on NXT, as great as it's been recently, and I hope it remains that way, I'm really, really curious to know what the first crowd takeover is going to be like. Because much like AEW's fabulous booking at the start of this year, Takeover was about 5 years in to just being the hottest brand going. Like, the Takeover show was a stamp of approval, unlike much I can ever remember in wrestling. And I'm really, really keen to see how this very, very challenging period for NXT will look on the other side when you can put 10,000 people back in an arena, see if that furnace is still white hot or not. That'll be a test of how NXT's managed to recover this year.
Well, let us know your thoughts on the Wednesday Night War and whether it is far from over in your eyes. At What Culture WWE. Actually, you can follow both of us. You can follow Michael Hamflett at
Michael Hamflett.
Follow me at Adam Wilborn. Follow us all at What Culture WWE. Make sure you subscribe to What Culture Wrestling on either iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts from for daily wrestling podcasts, including, as always, our reviews and previews of the Wednesday Night War, Raw, and SmackDown, of course. But this has been Get the Table. My thanks to Michael Hamflett. Thank you for joining us, and we will see you soon.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.